Hey, Bill Nye, the Science Guy here.
This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
This is Theo Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams.
I'm Mr. Deity, and you're listening to The Humanist Hour. I command you to listen now, or I will smite you.
Yes, I am a sound scientist. Came to evaluate the evidence on a closed case, highly classified, confidential, in a race against the clock.
Hi, I'm Jess Constantine.
And I'm Todd Stiefel.
And you're listening to The Humanist Hour, the official podcast of the American Humanist Association.
Humanism is the concept of being good without God. All right, so yeah, this month we have a couple great guests, all focused on the concept of music, humanist or atheist music, which is a kind of growing genre right now, and I think really important to our movement.
And I feel like there are subgenres too, and our guests sort of span that, which is kind of neat.
That's true. Yeah, it's certainly not uniform. We've got satire, we've got kind of folk rock, we've got hard rock, we've got, I mean, there's hip hop with people like Grin Square, who's not on our show this month, but we've got all sorts of great styles of music as well, but all of them kind of helping provide the theme and the concept behind humanism and atheism. It's kind of a cool trend.
Yeah. And they provide that artistic piece that is sort of talked about as sometimes being missing in the humanist movement. And, you know, new humanism is supposed to sort of focus on the things that we do enjoy and the things that we do, you know, participate in, believe in, and art and music is a big part of that.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got Roy Zimmerman, who's been doing satirical music for a really long time, and a lot of it focuses on either politics or religion and humanism. And we also have Bruce Harris from a band, Words Such as Burn, which I'm in, for all disclaiming purposes. We'll be playing the Rock Beyond Belief show in a few months, and we have some music coming out in a few weeks.
And we also have Shelley Siegel, who is a singer-songwriter from Australia. And she's going to talk to us about her latest record, which is called An Atheist Album. But before we get into music, Todd, there's something serious that we should talk about.
So to lead off this month's show, we'd like to do a little tribute and spend a little time talking about Hitch, because I think that's near and dear to many of our hearts and what he contributed to our movement. And so it's a very sad, sad time right now that he has passed. But as I've seen many people say, you know, he's helped give many of us voices and helped encourage us. And now the fight's in our hands. We're going to take it from here.
I just want to say that I'm grateful for all that the movement has gained from Christopher, and that's it. I'm thankful, and I hope that we do him proud.
I think we will, and I know he can't hear me, but you know, I wish to express my thanks to Hitch as well, and making possible what many of us are doing now to help advance our cause. So thank you to Hitch, and I think he, as a man who lived life with much fun and excitement and enthusiasm, and certainly a man who knew how to party, I think we would do him well and serve his memory well to move on and always remember him, but enjoy ourselves, enjoy life, and be active and make a difference in the world. So on that note, I think we should, in honor of Hitch, switch topics and start talking about something fun, because I think he would.
I agree, Todd. Let's switch to something a little more lighter. It's December, which means there are a variety of holidays which we could choose to celebrate. So maybe we should talk about that, Todd. What do you celebrate?
I celebrate life and Christmas and sort of the solstice. But I like Christmas. You know, it's weird because on one hand, I don't believe in even the slightest bit of any of the Christmas myth, whether it be Saint Nick or Jesus or wise men or any of that stuff. I do believe there was a Jesus, but I don't believe he was born in any of the ways they try to claim. You know, all these myths that try to put a guy who was born in Nazareth to be born in Bethlehem to fulfill some prophecy. But at the same time, I love what Christmas stands for, except for the Jesus stuff. I love, you know, the fun and the family and the generosity, and I think it's great.
I agree. I believe that there is a pretty cool hippie named Jesus that, you know, like to do good things for people and teach cool lessons. I agree with that. But I don't believe he's the son of God and all that stuff. So I celebrate Christmas just, you know, in the secular way, and no Santa Claus, no church, no mass, nothing like that, but just just basically the meal, the gathering, the presents, the decorating. I mean, we do a Christmas tree and all that kind of stuff just because I like it. It's fun. Yeah. And I mean, I even listen to Christmas music and I don't care. You know, it's okay to me. Like, I understand. I guess for me, it's more nostalgia because like my parents used to listen to it. So,
yeah.
And musically, like it does speak to me, but not necessarily the lyrics, you know?
Well, I think this is a good point considering this show is actually about music.
You're right,
although
Todd.
It's not about holiday music, but see, I actually like Christmas music too, except there's a few things I have a beef with. First, I don't like listening to Christmas music starting at the beginning of November. I think that's a little excessive.
I agree.
Two, I dig the Christmas songs that are more like fun and secular or even not as secular, but just good. I have a problem though with the non-secular songs that are about like enslavement to Jesus or God. You know, the ones where they refer to him, our Lord Jesus or our Lord God or things like that. Those ones I have a beef with. I'm no slave. I have no lords. So give me Frosty the Snowman and Rudolph the Rain. No, you know what I mean.
Rudolph the Rain-Nosed Red Deer?
Yes, he was red.
I'm assuming you don't like Oh Holy Night, Silent Night, Little Town of Bethlehem, things like that. Those are no good for you.
It depends. I'm trying to remember the lyrics of all of them, but some of them I'm okay with. I like the song Silent Night, but when they get to the points in some of these songs about, you know, bow down to your slave master Jesus, I don't like that part. I find it disturbing, and so many people find it glorious.
Well, because I mean, it's not just the fact that they're talking about bowing down and enslave yourself to Jesus. Like, you wouldn't like that no matter who they were talking about. Like,
exactly.
It's just, but and I, to me, I guess like I can listen to it if it's like Nat King Cole singing or Ella Fitzgerald or Bing Crosby. Like, that's like artistically, I can listen to it, and I guess I can separate the message behind it. And I don't know what that means. I don't know if that makes me a less, you know, a bad skeptic. I don't know what that makes me, but that's just how I feel about it for nostalgia and for the art of it.
And the art is beautiful for the, you know, I think on a lot of these songs, and I like, I like the music in general. I think most people feel that way. I mean, I agree with you. I think it's, for the most part, it's good. Just some of the lyrics bother me a little bit. I don't mind the lyrics about Jesus born in the manger and all that. It's like, yeah, whatever. Okay. It's a myth. So what, you know, we sing songs about other myths all the time.
Well, I'm curious to hear what our guests on the show have to say about Christmas music, and if they listen to it or if they perform any of it, or just what their thoughts are.
Yeah, and I wonder if any of them object to the racist Christmas songs.
What's a racist Christmas song?
White Christmas. Come on now.
White Christmas is one of my favorite Christmas movies, actually.
Uh-huh.
I mean, my all-time favorite is The Christmas Story, which is a secular movie. And we actually had the narrator from that. The movie is like a playoff from like a short story written by Gene Shepard. And we had a clip of him reading it because he used to have a radio show. So he read a little bit of the Red Ryder BB gun story.
that is a great movie.
So we played that last December. So if you also like that movie and you like Gene Shepard, check out our archives for last December's show, December 2010.
So speaking of holiday music and humanist music at the same time, I was actually listening this morning to an album called Peacenik by Roy Zimmerman, one of our guests today, because he actually did an entire album on the theme of holiday music, but from a satire and comedy perspective. It's pretty good stuff.
You mean Buy War Toys for Christmas is satire?
I think that and Krisma Hanu Rama Kadana Kwanzaa.
So yes, Roy Zimmerman is our first guest. I'm really excited. He is talented, he is smart, and he is hilarious. And his tagline is that he writes and performs funny songs about ignorance, war, and greed.
And even as all nations strive the others to destroy, one holiday brings every nation joy. It's Christmas, Hanukkah, Ramadan, Kadana, Kwanzaa. What a merry multicultural time of year. I'm sure no matter where they celebrate over there, the time of year we celebrate over here.
Okay, listeners, we're here with Roy Zimmerman, who is a musician, a comedian, and an activist. Roy, thank you so much for being on the Humanist Hour.
My pleasure.
Now, Roy, as I just mentioned, you wear lots of different hats in your profession. Just tell our listeners about what you do.
Well, I'm touring constantly now. I've made a campaign promise to perform in all 50 states, you know, before the 2012 election. So touring is a major part of my life now. There's a lot going on, and a lot of stuff that's bubbling up in the street that has nothing to do with the candidates per se, you know, that has to do with the discontent with the economic situation and people's discontent with Washington and politics in general. So I feel like I'm campaigning for reason and for an overhaul of how we're thinking about politics.
So now when you say that you are campaigning, that is to say your tour, what are the issues that you sing about, or what's your platform?
Well, I'm hitting all the issues that, you know, either the political issues and or the social issues that people are talking about. So, you know, there are songs about same-sex marriage, there are songs about creationism versus evolutionism, and songs about abstinence-only sex education, you know, as well as a lot of digs at the particular politicians and their positions.
Roy, do you consider yourself more of an artist or more of an activist?
Well, the music and the comedy come naturally. I mean, when I write songs, they turn out funny, and politics comes burbling through there too. So I don't know that I would say I'm more one or another. It all kind of combines, you know. My wife and I write a lot of these songs together, and we're constantly comparing notes on the scene and stuff then too. So, you know, the activism is a natural byproduct, I think, of writing the funny songs about what's going on.
Do you write any non-comedic music?
Well, yeah, you know, more and more some of the songs that I'm doing even now in the act, you know, are more heartfelt, I guess you'd say. There's a song that we've written together called "Hope, Struggle, and Change," which is dovetails nicely with the Occupy movement, I think, you know, because a lot of people have shown a lot of discontent with Barack Obama, you know, particularly actually progressive people who were big supporters of him in the first place. And I mean, you might remember that his theme song was "Signed, Sealed, Delivered," and now it's "You've Lost That Loving Feeling." But this is our movement. It's a movement that is really bipartisan or sort of omnipartisan, you know, a movement of the 99%. And I think that serves well as a theme song for that campaign.
Now, Roy, Todd and I have recently been having this sort of discussion or debate, if you ask Todd, about Christmas music. And so we were just curious about how you feel about listening, you know, as a secular musician yourself, how do you feel about listening to Christmas songs?
I've got the whole CD called Peacenik, which is sort of a secular humanist look at the holidays. So I'm a huge fan, of course.
And Todd was saying earlier that, you know, as far as the songs that talk about, you know, bowing down to Jesus Christ, our Savior, and things like that, those are not lyrics. Those are not songs that he can listen to. And I say that I can appreciate those just like purely on an artistic level. I mean, like I can listen to Bing Crosby or Nat King Cole or Ella Fitzgerald sing, you know, anything, religious or not.
Well, for people of my generation, at least, those songs have an ancient appeal, kind of irrespective of the religious side of them. I think, you know, they just sound ancient, and you know, we know now that, you know, because we're reasonable people, that they're just pop songs from the 30s, but they're beautifully crafted, beautifully constructed, you know, excellent lyrics, all of that stuff. So it's easy to appreciate them from that point of view. Some of the stuff on the Peacenik album actually harkens back to those songs.
Roy, what are some of your musical influences?
Well, I mean, some of them are obvious. I mean, Tom Lehrer is a huge influence, of course. You know, the kind of the state of satire as it existed in America, late 50s, early 60s. But going back before that, a lot of the Broadway writers, you know, Cole Porter and Rodgers and Hart, and they wrote some really scathingly satirical songs that are models of how to get a message across in a song. But, you know, on the popular side, obviously, Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell, and the Beach Boys are a huge influence, too.
And I think I remember reading on your bio there that you listed Ani DiFranco as one of your musical...
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, she's got a truly original way of combining a message with really compelling music. And she's funny. I mean, that's the other thing. She's really funny.
Yeah, I just love that she is this sort of tiny figure, like this tiny physical person who has such a large sort of message and voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's really powerful.
Uh-huh.
Now, Roy, I have a two-part question for you. Can you tell our listeners how you got started both as a musician and also how did you get involved in the humanist or the free thought movement with your work?
Well, I'll start with the second question first. The thing that pulled me into the free thought community or so forth is really one song. That was my sort of portal, like I should say, within the song is Creation Science 101. It's a song I do that talks about the debate about creationism and teaching that in the public schools. And, you know, that song was videotaped at a skeptics conference. Now, what, 6 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that, went up on YouTube and was passed along. It made the front page of YouTube, made the featured section of YouTube, right? You know, so that was one of my early YouTube hits, and generated a lot of notoriety, just in and of itself that way. So I found a natural constituency there, you know, amongst humanists and skeptics and secular students groups and free thinkers and so forth, just through that one song. A lot of my songs hearken toward that as well.
Yeah, I know you are going to be playing the Rock Beyond Belief Festival in a couple months and going
yes,
back.
I am.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. So I recall at the time the bass was trying to argue with us about how we didn't have, you know, as big as celebrities playing as the Southern Baptists with Franklin Graham had. And one of the retorts we had back to them was, well, actually, just one of our acts, Roy Zimmerman, has more YouTube hits than all of the Christian bands combined. and maybe
yeah,
that
well,
actually worked because the event's happening.
That could be. If you study statistics, that could be because there's only one of me and there are so many of them. But I don't know. They're dividing their vote that way. That's good. I like being put forward that way. But I do look forward so much to Rock Beyond Belief. You know, as you well know, it was all set and then it had to kind of caved in before. So I'm glad that we're getting it back together and we'll be real interested to see how it turns out.
Yep, it's going to be March 31st right here in North Carolina at Fort Bragg. Right here for me, at least. In North Carolina.
Okay, so that's how you got into the humanist movement. Can you also tell our listeners, how did you get started as a musician?
Yeah, well, you know, I began writing songs in high school, really, you know, and right away they sort of started coming out funny. that's sort of a natural way that the songs come out of my pen. So, and then I had a group, you know, I had a quartet together during the 90s called The Foreman. And we did folk era style stuff like the Keeksa Trio and the Limelighters and so forth. And it wasn't too long before those songs started becoming political then too. During the Clinton years, there was a lot to write about as well. It was an evolution as these things are, but that's how I kind of got started writing the political songs. And after I left the group, that's pretty much all I've done.
Do you have any stories from the road? I mean, different bands have different things, like Ozzy accidentally biting the head off of a bat, and you know, bands having their seventh drummer die in some sort of incident.
Done that, of course. Done all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure. You're on your like 10th drummer, I believe. But so do you have any cool road warrior stories?
I don't know. America is a wondrous place. I'll put it that way. I do encounter some opposition, you know, because I. Because the point of view can be pretty strident sometimes, and you know, most of the shows I play, people know what they're in for. They come for satire. They know they're in for a kind of a lefty point of view and so forth. So I'm preaching to the choir often, but sometimes I'll find myself playing, you know, for a mixed crowd, as I did in Arlington, Texas, for the Free Thinkers group right near Arlington there. And Arlington is right near Dallas. It's kind of a military town, and the show was happening in this little bar there. And there was one guy who got pretty upset about what I was singing about, and he actually rushed me on stage.
Whoa.
I could see him getting more and more agitated as the set was going on, and I really was not prepared for it when he jumped up on stage and he said, "This is over," and he yanked the cord out of my guitar, you know. And really, thank God for the Freethinkers, because there was a big strapping Freethinker student type sitting in the front row who jumped up and took the guy to the back wall before I could even subdue him with cleverness. And it turned into something of a melee, but I got to say that that is the exception, definitely. You know, many times, even when I've played for people who disagree with me, the reaction is just like, you know, I disagree with everything you said, but I laughed anyway. I love to hear that.
Roy, I'm just curious though, when you're playing at a place where maybe people don't necessarily know what they're in for with you, and maybe it's sort of a more conservative crowd, let's put it that way. Do you ever get someone reacting in a way that they agree with you because they don't realize that you're sort of a, you know, they don't realize that it's satire, that it's, you're poking fun at what they maybe believe in seriously? Does that ever happen?
I gotta say, most of the time. I mean, I used to, for instance, I opened for Kenny Loggins a little while back, and you know, that was a big crowd, 1,500 people or something, you know, who are not sorted along any particular political lines. And I did a joke about Dick Cheney. I do a joke about Dick Cheney's hunting accident, that he was just exercising his Second Amendment right to free speech. Okay, so there you go. And so I did my set, and then Kenny Loggins did his whole generous hour and a half long set or whatever, and I'm selling the CDs afterward. And a guy comes striding up to me with great purpose, and he says, "First Amendment's free speech, buddy."
That's awesome.
So it was important to me that joke had hit home with him. I had touched him. I touched him in a place he hadn't been touched in a while.
Roy, one thing, I mean, I think that what you do is great. I think that reaching people with music is amazing. And I love also that you put in comedy, you put in humor. And I think that really gives you an opportunity to talk about things that are often sort of uncomfortable, like religion and politics and things like that. And so I'm assuming that's a strategy of yours.
Yeah. I will say too that I think the humor is an interesting and important way to bridge gaps, you know, right? I mean, there are really, within the humanist kind of movement, if I can call it a movement, you know, within America, or within the humanist community, there are kind of two camps that I've noticed, right? You know, there is an aggressive sort of atheist community that's interested in maybe even converting people, is the way to put it. You know, that there are people who are very right, and you've seen this, you know what I'm talking about, you know, and there are people who are maybe more interested in a positive articulation of humanist values and a more accepting or open kind of a viewpoint toward believers as well. I think the humor can bridge that gap. And so if I do a song like Creation Science 101 or a song like I Want a Marriage Like They Have in the Bible on the new CD. That's my attempt is to, you know, have a definite point of view, state it stridently, but do it in a humorous way that invites people into the point of view.
So Roy, is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners?
Well, yeah, you know, I frame a lot of these shows as with the title Live from the Starving Year. Because there was a wonderful legendary nightclub in San Francisco in the late 50s, early 60s called the Hungry Eye. You may have known about this. Hungry Eye was a place where you could go to see Mort Saul or Lenny Bruce or Phyllis Diller or Maya Angelou, any number of people, you know, who were kind of putting together the comedy, the music, and the kind of the social message at the same time. And I love that. I love that concept. And so, my wife and I have invented this new place called the Starving Year, which harkens back to that, but also brings those things together now when they're most needed, I think. So the Starving Year lives, on YouTube. Certainly all my songs are up there, but I'm also doing interviews with interesting people. Weird Al Yankovic and Holly Neer and Professor Irwin Corey, P.C. Myers, as a matter of fact. These are all interviews that are coming up on the Starving Year on YouTube. And, obviously people can go to Facebook and like me and follow me on Twitter and stuff. These are all places where the Starving Year lives as well.
Great. Well, Roy, thank you so much, first of all, for doing the work that you do and for reaching so many people. And good luck on your campaign promise. And thank you for being on the Humanist Hour.
You betcha.
I want a marriage like they had in the Bible, like they had in the Bible, like they had in the Bible. Want a marriage like they had in the Bible, because the Bible tells me so. Now Abraham and Sarah had a marriage, but she could not bear him a kid. So Sarah gave Abraham a slave girl, and pretty soon they did it, and she did, Lord, Lord. Yeah, pretty soon they did it, and they did it, and they did it, and they did it, and she did. Now I know slavery was banned, but a woman should be free to give a slave girl to her husband. I want a marriage like they had in the Bible, like they had in the Bible, like they had in the Bible. I want a marriage like they had in the Bible, because the Bible tells me so.
That was I Want a Marriage Like They Had in the Bible by Roy Zimmerman off of his latest album, You're Getting Sleepy. You can purchase this album. You can learn more about Roy and check out his campaign tour on his website at royzimmerman.com. That's Roy Zimmerman, ZIMMERMAN.com.
Excellent. Let's shift gears a little bit and move from the world of satirical music into the world of modern music.
Yeah, so we have Shelley Siegel, who is the singer-songwriter from Australia, and she's going to talk about her latest record, which is called An Atheist Album. So we're going to lead into this interview with a clip from Saved, which is a song off of An Atheist Album by Shelley Siegel.
Say that I need to be saved. Say with me the devil got his way. I want to know how when you are praying, when you are doomsdaying, how you think you know that someone is listening to what you are saying. So you
Shelley Siegel, welcome to the show.
Hi, Todd. Hi, Jess. Thanks for having me.
Now, Shelley, you are a musician, and your latest album is called An Atheist Album. So I want to talk about how, what sort of inspired you to sort of devote a whole album or the lyrics to this sort of free thought and atheist movement. But before we get to that, can you tell listeners just sort of what's your musical background? How did you get started as a musician?
Well, I grew up in a musical family. My dad plays violin and sings and works in a function wedding band. And yeah, I've just always been surrounded by music, and I've always loved music. I started singing when I was 3, and when I was 11, I started writing songs, and I started performing with my dad's band, just going to functions, doing 1 or 2 songs each time, and until eventually I was performing the whole night with him. And yeah, I studied music. I did a music degree here in Melbourne. And yeah, I guess that's my musical background.
Cool. Were you raised as an atheist, or how did you get into that sort of that movement?
Yeah, well, no, I definitely wasn't raised as an atheist, because the band was also a Jewish wedding band.
All right.
Yeah, my parents are Jewish, and me and my brother were raised Jewish. They're not Orthodox. They're not very strict, but it was just like the foundation of our beliefs, and it wasn't ever questioned. And that worldview of the Jewish Judeo-Christian God as the creator of the universe, that was never even questioned. Like, I used to pray when I was a kid, even just before I went to bed, and I'd make up little songs to God. And then, yeah,
Did you make up any songs back to you?
No, he never sang back, never had any nice harmonies.
Sure.
But, yeah, when I was in high school, in year 11, I started learning about evolution and in biology class. That was kind of the first crack, I guess, in my belief system. And I started kind of see where the flaws were and start to question everything. And I guess where it ties into my music is I also have some folk influences, and I always write lyrics that are like a self-expression or about how I'm feeling or what I'm going through. For a long time, it was a lot of breakup and love songs. And then as I started to go through this really intense change where I was questioning the foundation of my worldview and changing the way I saw everything, that just seemed the natural progression, was to write about those things.
Sure.
How do your parents feel about this big album being called an atheist album?
To be honest, they're pretty cool. Like, we've been arguing for the last 6 years. But they're so loving and they're so supportive, and yeah, they're proud of me. Like, they actually show their friends my album, which is amazing. I mean, I know a lot of families really get torn apart by this issue, but they're incredibly supportive, and yeah, I really appreciate that.
Do you still perform with your dad's band?
Yeah, I do. I mean, not as much now because I'm kind of doing my own original stuff and back and forth overseas. So I don't get to play with them as much. But, yeah, when I'm in town and they've got gigs on, I do.
How does revisiting that world go for you? Like, how
well,
does...
I still see the purely human side of it. I mean, mm-hmm. they're people and they're celebrating a day that's really important to them. And I can relate to that side of it and appreciate that they're going through something really meaningful. And there's aspects of it, where, you know, with the prayer and that kind of bother me, but I try not to let it bother me and not involved in it really. It's a job when it's like that.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, me and my father, we also do, with my uncle as well, we play for old folks' homes, but they're Jewish ones. And I mean, I'll sing traditional Jewish songs, Jewish folk songs, and songs about the homeland and God. And I mean, it's not my beliefs, but it's music, and
right.
it makes these people really happy. And they're really, really elderly, and I don't think you could really even begin to have a discussion with right. many of them about these issues. But I'm still happy to bring a smile to their face. So yeah, it doesn't change the beauty of that for me. There are some things though, like my father goes to synagogue regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's singing a performance, I want to go to support him. Like, I don't like going to synagogue at all. And he's my father, so I feel like I have to support him. But in the synagogue that my family go to, the women are separated. So the women sit upstairs.
Really?
The men sit downstairs, and I find that very offensive and obviously very sexist. And I mean,
you want all the women outside, right?
Everybody outside. But if you're elderly or you have trouble walking, they have a section downstairs at the back, separate from the men, where you can sit on the same level. But they have this, it's called a mechitza, and they have like a curtain in front of you. You can still see, so it's a see-through curtain, but it's just this kind of symbolic barrier, and I really I really dislike that. So if I do go to the synagogue to watch my father perform, I skip the prayers and I come just for that section, and I stand out from behind the mechitza because I don't want to, I'm not going to stand behind a screen to watch my dad. So there's things now that I go back to and I'm just kind of have a strong disagreement with, and I won't participate in it, but I try not to be, you know, too in the face, just,
sure,
just my thing and go.
It's wild when the blinders come off, the things you notice. Like I was at a Catholic, and I was in a Catholic church like 2 years ago, and I noticed behind the altar were all these like artistic designs, and they were of axes and daggers and like shields and swords. Wait a minute, what does this have to do with worshiping a loving God? Oh, yeah. Maybe not so loving. But I would have never noticed stuff like that when I was a kid. Just like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe I went for so long without realizing that that was just such a fundamentally sexist attitude to just have the women kind of out of the way. I mean, I know that's not how they interpret it, but it is strange coming back and seeing it from a different side.
You've talked about sort of where you got your inspiration for some of your lyrics. Can you talk about some of your sort of artistic or your musical inspirations?
Yeah, my biggest musical influence, my favorite artist would have to be Ani DiFranco.
Nice.
She's an awesome folk singer-songwriter, folk rock kind of thing. And yeah, she always is telling stories and also putting her viewpoints across and her philosophy in her music in a way that's like, it's really poetic and beautiful and also really funky and really enjoyable. So I guess she's my hero in that way. I like to tell stories, and I like to be able to tell them in an enjoyable way. It makes you kind of bop your head a bit.
Sure.
You clearly have some reggae influence in there. How do you blend the folk and reggae together?
I feel like I have a lot of influences from pretty much every genre, and I think that's from singing with the wedding band from such a young age, because you just cover all genres, and people like reggae, they like rock music. You'll be singing top 40 stuff, and in the background times I'd be singing jazz, and I also do jazz gigs separate from the wedding band as well. So I think it's just all those influences coming together. It just comes out pretty naturally.
How are the sales going of your album so far?
Yeah, pretty good. I just got my hard copy back this week, so I'm just organizing a way to get that up online, because until this week it was just digital downloads available. And
okay, so you haven't done a tour for the Atheist album?
No, not yet. That's hopefully coming up.
So when you plan your tour for the release of an Atheist album, do you have to be sort of strategic about where you can play? Or how does that work? Like what's your tour going to look like?
Local places I would play would be like, I mean, I guess probably not familiar with the area, like Brunswick, kind of this music scene in Melbourne is at the moment very kind of gypsy, very alternative and very open. And there's an Aussie hip hop thing that's going at the moment. I think people are, that's interesting. People are very, very open, and I can't imagine the places where I usually play, anyone having a problem with the themes of my songs.
Well, that's great, because I mean, I imagine if you were releasing that album in the States, you'd have to be rather strategic and probably playing for sort of the smaller humanist groups and in some very liberal cities at the bars there. So I'm glad that's not the case. Maybe you can tell our listeners a little bit more about just in general what it's like to be in Australia and to be an out atheist.
The cool thing is that you're not as vilified here. There's not that. I mean, it's amazing that I live in a country where I can make an album called an atheist album and be challenging in this way. And, you know, I'm safe. My safety is not threatened. It's really cool.
Yeah.
But I think there is a need for these discussions to be in the public public discourse. I spoke to this one guy in Egypt who contacted me about the album. He was really nice and just like really into the music, and he was saying how he can't even be openly atheist in his country for fear of his life,
right,
and his safety. So, I mean, can't even imagine having a movement like that over there yet. But right. Here, yeah, it's here, it's alive. They've just recently started the first Australian atheist radio program. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of groups. There's people trying to get the message out there and fight against religious oppression.
Switching notes a bit, so to speak, what would you say is your craziest experience when performing live?
Oh, there's always the drunk person that wants to kind of get up and join in or take over, something like that. And I was a bit naive. I used to let people, if they'd ask, to come up. Now I say, oh, no, that's against company policy.
Good for you.
But, yeah, there's been some hijackings. Mm-hmm. And some, oh, no, actually, there's a worse thing. One time in the wedding band, it was ages ago, it would have been like 10 years ago now, but we had a bass player. And at the weddings, we get some free booze that they provide alcohol to the band table, usually, which is
now
nice.
Now I'm noting you were 14.
Yeah, I know.
it's different here.
Apparently. Better, one might say, but.
Yep.
So anyway, you had a bass player. You were drunk at 14. Go ahead.
I don't think I had much to drink, but yeah, he got so drunk that he passed out on stage.
Oh my goodness.
And he was just kind of, against the back wall anyway. He was just kind of leaning against the back wall and then slowly just, you know, fell asleep.
Wow.
We didn't really know what to do. It's just like, after this set, okay, go home now. And didn't work with him again, obviously.
Yeah.
That was pretty crazy.
So, Shelley, how can our listeners find your music, learn more about you?
Well, I've got a website up, which is www.shelleysiegel.com. And I've got a Facebook page under the same name. And I've got some snippets up of the tracks and the album. And you can buy the album on iTunes or Amazon. It's called An Atheist Album. And yeah, get in touch and come say g'day on Facebook or something.
Nice.
And I should be having a live streamed online gig on January the 15th is the next kind of online thing coming up. So if you join my Facebook page, I can let you know when that's going to be and how to watch that online.
That's great. Well, I'm excited. So you definitely, I picked up 2 new fans here in the States. So that's awesome. And Shelley, thanks for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been good fun.
Okay, listeners, next we have an exclusive sort of storyteller's session with Shelley Siegel. She's going to play a song for us live called Eve. So here it is, a live Humanist Hour exclusive from Shelley Siegel.
This song is called Eve. And it's the first track on the album, kind of because Adam and Eve is supposedly the beginning of everything. And I got the idea for this song when I was looking through some YouTube videos, and there was this one lady from the States who was saying, like explaining through scripture why women are supposed to submit to their husbands and why they can't be teachers of men, and just all these really horrible, oppressive ideas and giving a scriptural backing for them. And it was so sad to see this clearly, like, really strong and intelligent, articulate woman kind of telling other women how they cannot be that way. And that was that was the impetus for this song. This is, yeah, it discusses kind of not the more horrific biblical things, rulings regarding women, but more the kind of everyday, day-to-day rules. And some of them I experienced myself in Judaism, like when I was younger. I'm a singer and I'm not an Orthodox Jewish man. I'm allowed to hear a woman sing. So even at the functions, if I would come on and onto stage to sing and the religious men hadn't left yet, they would kind of run over and, quick, get off stage. You can't sing yet because people aren't allowed to hear your voice. And I couldn't participate when I wanted to in the service because I'm not allowed to sing. So there's a line about that in the song. Yeah, and a lot of religious women will kind of defend these small prejudices against them and say it's part of their role and it's not that they're less than men, they're just different. And, yeah, this song is my response to that.
The Bible tells me I was made for and from man, and I must do for him everything that I can. I must surrender to his will, yeah, I must submit. I can't make the household decisions, cause I am unfit. It tells me my place with everlasting grace. The Bible tells me I must be silent, you can't hear my voice. My role has been divinely defined, and I have no other choice. I may not be a teacher of man, I must cover up my shame. These are the laws of the one who in vain I cannot name. He tells me my place with everlasting grace. And my punishment for wanting to learn is a painful birth from which I may not return. The Bible tells me that I am unclean. I am impure, you cannot touch me. And it has nothing to do with where I've been. It is part of who I am. It is because I corrupt man. I was asking for it just by being a woman. He tells me my place with everlasting grace. And my punishment for wanting to learn is a painful birth from which I may not return. The Bible tells me I was made for and from man, and I must do for him everything that I can. I must surrender to his will, yeah, I must submit. I can't make the household decisions, cause I am unfit. It tells me my place with everlasting grace. Yeah, it tells me my place with everlasting grace.
That was Shelley Siegel performing Eve exclusively for the Humanist Hour. And once again, that's off of her record, An Atheist Album. You can purchase that record, you can learn more about Shelley, and you can find out what her latest tour dates are at her website, shelleysiegel.com. That's shelleysiegal.com. And of course, you can find the links for her website and all the other artists on the show notes page for this episode at thehumanisthour.org. Okay, listeners, so we're going to round out our show with sort of a fun interview. And I got to sit down with my co-host, Todd Stiefel, and also his bandmate, Bruce Harris. So Todd and Bruce are in a band with a couple other folks from Raleigh, North Carolina. And in addition to having some songs with sort of with that same sort of atheist feel, Words Such as Burn is sort of also taking on an activist role. And so we'll learn a little bit more about that and we'll get to hear one of their songs. So here's Words Such as Burn.
Hello, Bruce. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, absolutely. Listeners, this is a pretty special situation for me. I'm here with my co-host, Todd, and his bandmate, Bruce Harris. Now, gentlemen, you're in a band together. What's the name of your band?
Words Such as Burn.
All right. We're going to come back to what that means. Todd, what's your role in the band?
I consider myself the third best guitarist out of two.
All right. Any vocals?
He does have some vocals on a couple of songs.
Okay.
Some wailing.
All right. I think it's funny that I said any vocals and he didn't answer that at all. He let Bruce answer. Bruce, what's your role?
I sing and I play bass.
Cool.
I also do a lot of the writing for the lyrics, and it's kind of a joint effort on where the song comes from, but a lot of the riffs will come from either the guitarist or me, and we kind of play with and develop it from there.
Cool. And what kind of band do you guys consider yourselves? What genre of music do you play?
I think that might be a mix, depending on who you ask. I would consider it rock or rock blues, but it's essentially a rock and roll band.
Yeah, we're kind of all over the place. We've got some punk, some blues,
yeah,
some alternative, some hard stuff, some... Heck, we even have like a metal song or two.
Cool. How about some polka? Do you do that there?
Not so far.
Okay. Right.
Not that we're ready to release.
Nice. It's in the workshop.
Yes.
Cool. And now, Todd, you've obviously, our listeners know a little bit more about your personal sort of life stance and the fact that you are a humanist and you're in the movement and you're an activist. Bruce, give us that sort of background on you. Do you consider yourself a humanist?
I do. I'm a humanist. I'm an atheist. I have really been getting more into seeing what I can do. I'm a graphic designer by trade, and I've been kind of working my way into the movement that way. I've done some billboards for the American Atheists. I just did the billboard that they're putting up in the New Jersey Tunnel in Florida. I've done a few jobs for the atheist movement, and I'm trying to do more of that work, but I'm also trying to work that angle in with the band too. So
sure. Okay.
It's pretty fun.
So you did the Lincoln Tunnel billboard? That's
yeah.
Cool. I've mm-hmm. driven by that. Nice.
I'm really impressed by some of the people that I know, including Todd, and how much he does to make the world a better place, not only for free thinkers and atheists, but for everyone in general. I think what the movement is becoming is just a general positive for everyone, and I'd like to be a part of that.
That's nice.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, that's cool. So let's talk about how you can do that through your music. That's kind of the emphasis of our show this month. So what are some ways that you either have done that or are hoping to do that through your band as a sort of medium for connecting with the movement?
We've got a song coming out. It's called Flow, and the message of Flow is very very atheist, very positive, and somewhat conciliatory. The message is basically, you know, we've all had, as atheists, we've all generally had this experience where we have a good friend or a relative who learns that we're an atheist, and the dynamic changes after they learn that. And, you know, some people are fine with it. Usually they're, you know, really moderate people. They don't tend to be too crazy about it, but they don't mind. But some people are outright bigoted against it. Some people just kind of become not your friend anymore and don't participate in the relationship. But what really gets me is the people who really love you and are worried about you, and they believe this so much, and they, you know, they pray for your salvation, and they talk to you, and they try to pull you over to, you know, to pull you back to your belief, and they just don't understand that the change in this relationship didn't happen because you're an atheist. It happened because of what's going on in their mind and the struggle that they're having. And it's tragic. And that's what Flow is about.
All right. I like that. So you're saying that it's a song that people can identify with. Like, I feel like those are the most powerful songs. And obviously, you know, by choosing the lyrics and by choosing this experience of coming out as an atheist and the dynamics of that relationship with having the other person in the relationship being a believer, like, you're sort of narrowing the scope, but I think that's super important because that's a population that, you know, just like we don't get to watch movies where we can necessarily identify with main characters, there aren't many songs that we can identify with lyrically. And so I think that that's awesome.
And the way that we as a band are contributing to the movement as a whole is we're going to be posting the song on iTunes and Amazon and all these other sites where you can download the song. And the proceeds that we take will all go to the Secular Student Alliance.
That's amazing. That's great. Tell our listeners where they can download it.
Well, they're going to be able to download it from iTunes. They're going to just be able to look up words such as "burn" on iTunes or Amazon, or, you know, there are an array of other sites where it will be available, pretty much where you would expect it to be. And you can download it. I think it's going to be a dollar download or something like that. And what we make off of that will go back to this Secular Student Alliance.
Nice.
And I think it's probably appropriate for me to issue my disclaimers that I'm the co-host of this show, and obviously I've got my band on here, and some might say, oh, you're promoting your band, but, you know, it's really not for my benefit. I've actually pledged to give all of my proceeds back to SSA. So I'm really going to be, you know, this is for me. Promoting this band is really about promoting music and promoting humanism and atheism and helping get that message out there. And, you know, so I just want to help raise some money, and, you know, hopefully we can put some stuff out there that people can connect with.
Yeah. And I think the Secular Student Alliance is a fantastic angle too, because the young people are the biggest growing atheist portion of the population from what I understand. I could be wrong on that, but, you know, to get this message out there that it's okay, that you can be a perfectly functional, perfectly productive member of society and not have any supernatural beliefs, I think that's important to let them know that they can be secure in that.
Right. And I think that communicating with them through music is a great tool. It's a great idea.
You know, a really interesting point for me in the band was when I first heard the lyrics to what became Flow. Because I didn't know what to expect out of Bruce's lyrics. You know, he just kind of, it was this outline of this song we put together. And you know, Bruce is like, oh, okay, I'll write some lyrics. All right, let's see what that's like. And he comes back. I was just blown away at how powerful the lyrics were and how they really resonated with me. Especially there's a point in the song where he belts out, "Let love flow." And that for me was really, it really resonated. And I think it's an important aspect for the movement as a whole, because I think we're more and more turning towards these messages of love, and that I think that's a front we can really claim that many other religious groups and other people in other movements can't claim as much, because they've got so much bigotry and so much baggage built into their scriptures and texts. And that's it's kind of a cool point in the song.
So are you guys, are you signed on a label?
Nope. This is a completely private thing. There's no label. We put everything together on our own. My brother Sammy does all of the production on his computer. We record it in closets and basements and put everything together ourselves. So there's no finger in the pie anywhere. Right. All these proceeds are going to be pretty much straight to the source after what we have to pay to post the songs.
Sure. That's cool. All right, so now I'm curious as to the name of your band, Words Such as Burn. First, who came up with it?
Our guitarist Chris Holcomb suggested that when we were doing rounds of suggestions.
Okay.
And everyone would submit far too many suggestions for names of bands, and some were good, some were truly atrocious.
I want to know the truly atrocious ones.
What, let's see. Bartholomew Jenkins' Thresh-tacular Rockatorium of Splendor was my idea.
Wait. That was one? That was all one name?
Yeah. Bartholomew Jenkins' Thresh-tacular Rockatorium of Splendor. They shot that down for some reason.
I can't imagine why.
Let's see. Mr. Pfister, that was one that didn't really seem to take off with the group. Let's see. Very Hungry, that was one. Free Beer, which, you know, that's been done before, but it really works on a billboard.
Sure.
Naked Crayon, Vitreous Humor. there are lots of very poor choices. Mm. But actually, Chris came up with the name Words Such as Burn because that was a snippet from some inter-office safety manual or something like that that said it was a list of words that you shouldn't talk about in the office place because that makes people nervous, and words such as burn, hate, sex. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the complete list was. I think that's in there.
Burn, really?
In my email as well. I could pull that up.
I actually saved it too.
Yeah.
It's talking about workplace violence and how threats get taken seriously.
Yeah.
It says, words such as burn, shoot, get, hunt, bomb, or blow up should be taken seriously and require immediate action.
Wow. And this is not like, not on a plane, but just in the office, in the workplace?
In the workplace, yes.
Interesting.
You should if someone cracks a joke, you should not say "ooh, burn,"
yeah, exactly. Burn.
Because that might make someone violent.
So where can our listeners come to hear words such as burn? You guys have a pretty big show coming up that I personally am excited about.
Yeah, March 31st at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, we're going to be doing a show called Rock Beyond Belief, and it's going to be a huge event where. Honored to be sharing the stage with, you know, who's in the lineup, Todd, so far?
Roy Zimmerman, who
All right.
is also on this month's show, and Baba Brinkman, and Aiden, and a couple others. Those are just the musical acts, by the way.
Right.
There's a couple of like people that I've never heard of. Some guy named Richard Dawkins and a couple other speakers. Yeah, I don't know. They tell me he studies animals. Or
well,
something.
That's pretty impressive that you get to say that you've shared the stage with Richard Dawkins.
Oh, yeah. It'll definitely be a highlight of my life.
Well, Bruce, Todd, thank you for obviously doing the work that you do, the activist work that you do in our movement. Thank you for using music as a tool to reach people. I think that's very important, especially the demographic that you're talking about. And thanks for being on the show, Bruce.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Okay. Thanks for being here, man.
All right.
I know you can't sleep at night, you worry about me, and I know you wish I would return to the phone.
That was Flow by Words Such as Burn. And just really quickly, I want to give a shout out to Todd Stiefel, to Bruce Harris, and also the rest of the folks in the band, namely Sammy Harris on the drums and the recording engineer, Chris Holcomb, the lead guitarist, and Mr. Charles Stiefel, who is the father of my very favorite co-host, Todd Stiefel, on the keyboard. So in early January 2012, you'll be able to download Flow and other songs by Words Such as Burn from iTunes, from Amazon, from their website, things like that. So you're going to want to stay tuned to the Words Such as Burn Facebook page. So definitely check them out. We'll have a link to that on the show notes page for this episode. Don't forget, you can check them out at Rock Beyond Belief. Todd, tell the listeners about that.
Yeah, Rock Beyond Belief is going to be March 31st, a Saturday in 2012 from noon to 8 p.m. at Fort Bragg in North Carolina on the main parade field. It'll feature us and Roy Zimmerman, as well as Spoonboy, Aiden, Jeffrey Lewis, and Baba Brinkman, as well as a whole slew of great speakers from Jan McCrae to Dale McGowan to Richard Dawkins and Dan Barker and a whole bunch of other great people. So hopefully you can come check that out. Maybe make a week out of it. Hit the Reason Rally and then come on over down a little further south to hit Rock Beyond Belief.
Awesome. So that about wraps up our show for this month, Todd. I had a lot of fun doing this sort of atheist music mixtape with you. And listeners, I hope that you enjoyed it. So we gave you lots of different websites with lots of different information on songs, on tours, on schedules, and things like that. So don't forget, you can always just keep them in one place by visiting the show notes page for this episode at thehumanisthour.org. You can find all the Facebook pages for the bands on our show. You can go to their website. So visit thehumanisthour.org. And while you're there, you should like us on Facebook, comment on any of our shows, or send us a note. Let us know what you think.
Our archives are also available on thehumanisthour.org, and you can give us a shout on our listener comment line, which is 202-618-1371.
Yeah, and speaking of listener comments, I just want to give a quick shout out to Shane from Maryland. Shane, you sent us in a little listener comment through the contact page of our website, and I just want to say thanks for getting in touch with us. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being brave and for coming out as an atheist in high school. And that's awesome. Let us know what we can do to support you. And you're an inspiration to us all. So thank you, Shane, for getting in touch with us. All right, Todd. Well, that's it for this month. So thanks again. It's always a blast with you. And I hope that you have a happy and safe New Year.
A Merry New Year's to you as well.
And so you think that you can tell us how to live our lives, never questioning the source from which your moral core derives. You think that some